My friends, we are going to grow and get better together. This is not about me. This is about us. Welcome to Win Today with Johnny Martin. Welcome back, friends. Welcome back to another episode of Win Today with Johnny Martin. So happy to have you all back. Listen, if you listened to the last conversation, this is part two of what has been an absolutely phenomenal, phenomenal discussion with my friend Rourke Denver. Just a quick recap. Rourke is a current owner and founder of Ever Onward, which is a global leadership brand. We're going to talk much more about that in this episode. He is a former commander, United States Navy SEALs, ran training missions in Latin America, the Middle East, Africa. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal human being. We had an awesome conversation in the first episode. I'm so excited that you're joining us again. My friend Rourke Denver, what's going on, brother?
Hey, brother. Excited to be back.
So excited to have you back. When we left off last time, I wanted to let the listeners know about that real simple leadership philosophy. I really want to talk to you in today's episode a little bit about the simplest leadership lesson you've ever learned. We'll get to that in a minute. And then I really want to talk more about your campfire sessions and let everybody know what those are about. And so we're going to just hit the ground running and keep pressing here. So when we talk about leadership, for those of us that are listening, again, in the last episode, we talked about how I think people complicate things that are really simple. But one of the things that I've seen in the books, your books that I've read, and we'll talk about those towards the end of the session here. But one of the things you said at a speech you gave, probably several, but one that I listened to, and I love this, and you explained it in more detail, so I want to give you a chance to do that here. The simplest lesson you said, or one of the simplest lessons you said you ever learned, was that calm is contagious. So I want you just to sort of walk us through that, but also, is there a time where it is okay not to be? For guys like you and I just feel like that's not always the cloth that we're cut from. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I got you. Yeah. I mean, calm is contagious is you know, it's probably a full 10-minute conversation and story. And
sure.
I don't think we should do the whole thing here. We'll take up too much time. But the unpacking of it is when I was in basic training, we were doing our final training exercise. One of my peers, an officer in the class that's hoping to graduate and become a SEAL commando as well, was just kind of losing his head, screaming, at the troops, trying to get us caught up to this timeline. And this Master Chief Petty Officer, this senior ranking man in the United States Navy, he kind of came out and he just gave us this gift of saying, "Hey, gents, particularly just the officers," he just said, "Look, calm is contagious. I'm telling you, you have to recognize that if you keep your head," and this was the great explanation point, was, if you keep your head in our line of work, you keep your head. You cannot be losing it. You cannot break down and be panicked or, just energize the point where you can't think clearly, make good decisions, and kind of advance the ball on the battlefield to solve problems. And the fun thing about that calm is contagious line is you can supplant any word you want, right? Like chaos is contagious. Panic is contagious. Stupid, 100% contagious, right? So kind of picking a concept or a word that is powerful and will translate to other people is really the key. And when we're talking about leaders, which is what we're touching on more than anything, is that the troops are looking at you. And so if you're keeping it together, there's a good chance they're going to keep it together. And if you're falling apart, they're probably going to fall apart too. It's just kind of human nature to do that. And so that's the basics of calm is contagious. That's just a good place to be in a fight. I mean, I've proven this in pretty horrific gunfights to where if somebody lost their head, we got to pull them off the line and get them calmed down so they can make good decisions. I'm not saying you don't need to be animated, energized, yelling at some points doesn't mean you've lost the bubble, but you gotta keep your head or you're in big trouble. I think to answer your question on are there times not to be calm, I would say no, but by that I don't mean you're then passive and a Hindu cow and not reacting to anything. I feel like I can get into a pretty nasty fight and still retain a calmness or a stillness, which warriors are capable of doing, right? Like when you start talking about Musashi and samurai and these great warrior cultures for all these civilizations, they had this inner peace, balance, and ability to keep themselves calm in the worst of all situations. That's usually what won the fight, that and their training.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And I'm trying to think about, like, in my own life as I'm listening to you explain that, and it it's clear as a bell to hear it. But I think about those situations outside of a leadership perspective with me as a human being, right? As a husband, as a dad, or the people listening that feel like they're juggling 6,000 things in their life at one time. Is this something for you that obviously was practiced over decades, sharpened on the battlefield, and now used as a great tool, not just as a leadership expert, but as a man, a human being? How do you practice this? How does one practice this in their own life?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's I think everything we do well, the answer is yes, you've practiced it, or you've committed it to some level of training that you can execute it when it counts, right? So, you know, I played combative sports my whole life. I played sports up through, you know, the Division I college level, where we were competing for national championships, intense games, single-digit games, sudden-death type games. And, you know, so I probably did a lot of inoculation leading up to SEAL training. And then we get in SEAL training, and we make it so absurdly hard and challenging and visceral and real that when you get to your first gunfight, when you get to your first round of combat, it's not like the first time you were there. I mean, just the first time somebody popped up with an AK-47 and started shooting at me, it did not feel like the first time. I'd seen it before in training. My mind had committed to that moment and what I needed to do. I did what I needed to do, and it worked. You know, so, I mean, all those things, I think, lead towards a good place. In the comm space, I mean, I think everybody's got their own style. When I talk to leaders, I don't say, hey, you should be this, you should be that. I think you should be you, and then, sure, you know, multiply or kind of refine who that is. And there's some leaders that are kind of screamers and aggressive that work. And then there's a bunch of those that fail. And then there's cerebral whispering leaders that work. And then there's those that fail. I can say this when it comes to that calm is contagious. I'm a father. And on a few occasions, I've lost it, or I've let my emotion get away from me, and I've yelled or gotten loud.
I understand.
And what I realized is I basically just scared my kids, and I didn't have any impact beyond that. You know, and I think about when my dad was raising me, there were a couple of times he yelled, and I don't remember those much. I damn sure remember the one or two times he whispered and said he was either disappointed or something powerful, right? So it's like you can do a hell of a lot more impact and damage with a whisper than you can a yell.
That's such a great—
I mean, that's a real thing.
That's such a great point. The other piece that resonates with me too, and just for our listeners, and it's just a curious question more than anything else, but you mentioned a couple minutes ago, you know, the first time you were in a outside of training where you were in harm's way, you and your team, and you were being shot at, and you spoke about it like having a cup of coffee. But I have to know, as a man, when that happens for the first time, did it piss you off that somebody was trying to shoot at you?
You know, I didn't get my feelings hurt. You know, I mean, I knew where I was. I knew who we were going to see. I think it's one of the funny things when you hear— I heard a great line. I'll give the guy credit. Rob O'Neill, who's one of our famous SEALs. You know, he's on Fox News a bunch.
And, sure.
You know, one of the guys that was in the room when Bin Laden went down.
I'm familiar with him.
You know, I heard him recently when they're talking about, like, young, you know, college students or something that are offended by everything. Like, you know, just offended about everything. And I heard him on one of his interviews very calmly be like, you know, it's funny, I had people trying to murder me and I was never offended.
Right.
And so it didn't feel that way. You know, I mean, I think I saw a couple of my teammates get hurt and worse, and that definitely got me charged up. I also realized that, you know, I had to keep the balance of how we were going to address the battlefield and how we'd represent our country in return of those events. So, so look, I mean, somebody tries to take your life, I think you do feel it. I think what you realize is if you let that emotion grab you in the bad way, all of a sudden you're going to be like, you know, one of the Jedi's trying to balance between the light and the dark side of the force. You gotta stay in the light, you know? So
sure.
I didn't get my feelings hurt too bad, but I was pretty happy to have won the exchange.
Hey, no doubt. I'm happy as well. I think we're all very, very grateful for that and for your service.
No, I appreciate it.
Let me ask you this. As a type A guy, very well trained, not just in the military and warfare and tactics, but in somebody that has spent their life work leading in one capacity or another, how do you know when it's time to follow, and how comfortable are you? How comfortable is Rourke Denver being able to take a step back? And is that where really we put the ego aside and humility really takes the forefront? Because I'm a big believer in, you know, I have the confidence. I feel like I can have a conversation with anybody. And I may not know relative to the topic everything that they're discussing, but I feel like I have enough bearing, enough self-respect, and enough respect for others to be able to sit in a room with anybody and to have an intelligent conversation. What I struggle with sometimes is people that are in positions of authority who lead in a certain type of way that flies in the face of sort of my ethos, right? Or what I believe to be, not just from a work perspective, but from a life perspective, I have a hard time handling it. How do you, as somebody who does this for a living, has done it their entire adult life through sports, the SEALs, your business, all over the country, how comfortable are you stepping back and allowing yourself to be led? And yeah, what are some tricks to do that?
Yeah, no, it's a great thought stream, and I'm glad we're talking about it. I mean, the one beauty of the military is the military does it for you.
So, of course,
you know, when you start, whether you're an officer or an enlisted person, there's a whole lot of people up the chain of command that outrank you from day one. Right now, I might, as an enlisted or a junior officer, outrank a senior master chief, but in skill set and behavior, I don't outrank that guy.
Right.
He's got all the corporate knowledge and all the goods I want anyway. So you got to recognize, yeah, while technically, you know, he's supposed to salute me, you better believe I'm going to be waited on bated breath to hear what he has to say and what he can teach me to become a better leader, officer, and follower. So yeah, I think followership is something that every great leader has to develop. The one thing I figured out, I think early on, and this just has to do with being a good teammate, but it's really important and impactful for organizations, certainly at the corporate level, but it's the same for families or whatever else, is that we have this, you know, kind of inherent desire to, you know what's right or wrong by our compass, and therefore if the person that's leading you, if they're not doing it right, that you're like, I don't like this, I can't deal with it, so I'm going to sabotage it, right? Which is just 100% 180 out wrong thing to do.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, so if you're the person that's dealing with a tough leader, that's a tough road, and I don't envy you, although you're going to take a bunch of great lessons out of it. Here's the beauty of that situation. You can go down one of two paths. You can say, okay, I've got a tyrannical, horrible, incompetent leader that I am now beholden to and I have to, like, deal with. So you can either become that toxic force that doesn't help that person get better, doesn't help them achieve the job, even if they're not doing a good job of leading it, and then walk away there from that toxic and poisoned and worse for the wear. The organization fails, your experience fails, and probably the leader and you fail, right? Or you can say, look, I got this toxic, terrible leader. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to work my butt off to try and make him or her better. Because really, what else am I going to do? What I just described is what you're going to do, and that's good for nobody.
That's right.
So you can develop your own ability to operate in an uncomfortable situation. You can look at how that leader does things and say, Roger that. I am putting everything this leader does into my bag of tricks, and I am never going to do that when my time comes to sit in that seat. And so the organization flourishes if that you're that person. You become a better future leader because you've just put aside a whole bunch of stuff you know hurts people, isn't effective, and is bad for you. So you can make lemons out of lemonade in those situations.
And the
only thing you're going to do when you go toxic is discredit the organization and really yourself, because you're going to get the reputation for being the person that isn't somebody that's going to put their head down and work when things get tough. If you do the latter and you just do the simple things as best you can, you keep a good attitude, that stuff gets recognized like a red star cluster, right? Those are the people that are like, oh man, they were working for that guy or gal and came out of it smelling like a rose. I want that person on my team.
Absolutely. And I think a huge piece of that too is, and I'm sure you've seen this throughout your whole career in leadership, but as people approach their own lives too, it is very, very easy. And we live in a world where everybody is chomping at the bit to tell you what all the problems are. But very rarely will that person step up and say, well, yes, I identify this as a problem and it really bothers me, but here are some solutions I came up with independently and on my own. I did it on my own time. I didn't do it on company time because I'm here to do what you asked me to do. So that's what I'm going to do on company time, but on my own time, because this is important to me, either this business, this family, this passion of mine. So instead of just complaining about what's wrong or what I perceive is wrong, here's what I did on my own. I came up with some solutions for growth. Let me know what you think. Because I think a lot of people are afraid to have difficult conversations, right? But people, societally, people just don't like having difficult conversations. But I've found in my own life, as I've learned to embrace it, and it took me much longer than it took you, But I've garnered so much more respect from the people that I work with and in my own family and in my own circle when I've been much more candid and honest and said, okay, I don't necessarily agree, but here are some things I thought of that maybe will help us find some middle ground or help us make this outcome a little bit more effective for all parties involved.
Well, 100%. I mean, you just hit the nail on the head. And one of the things that I used to do when I finally got to the, what you'd call the executive level of leadership. So as the executive officer of advanced training, there's three people that run that command. The commanding officer who runs the entire vision of the company, the executive officer, that was my job, which really just does the nuts and bolts of making that commanding officer's vision happen, and the senior enlisted command master chief that runs that thing. But I would have, I had 20 some odd departments with hundreds of people. I mean, I had almost 1,000 person command, and any one of those department heads would come into my office on any given Tuesday amongst six others that had competing entities or competing issues and requirements of me. And when they'd come in with a problem, the very first thing I'm going to ask them, like, okay, what's the solution? And if they, put their hands up, like, I don't know, solve it, I'd be like, get out of my office. I'm going to go talk to the next guy. And then when that person comes in and said, hey, here's the three solutions, this is one I recommend, I'm like, sweet, do that one. Yeah. I mean, you know how easy you make it for a senior leader to give you what you want if you give them what you in a package that makes them think this is going to be easier for me to do.
Sure.
And that's the way you do it. You come in with solutions. You come in with problems to a senior leader, you're going to quickly go nowhere in that organization.
Sure. And if nothing else, Rourke, even if that senior leader or that person in your family or that person in your job, even if they don't agree with the solution, at least they know you took the time to try to come up with one.
For sure.
There was effort behind it. And I think that's what's huge.
No doubt about it.
What do you think about, and this is, you've talked a lot about the warrior mindset, and this is something that fascinates me on a million levels, but I think for the person that's listening, one of the greatest gifts I think we can provide people is, okay, so if I wanted to take all of this stuff that Rourke has been sharing and that we've been talking about, and I want to try something today in my own life, or tomorrow morning, if God blesses me with another day, I would love to get a snippet or several, however you're comfortable, advice from a SEAL, a leader, a successful businessman on how a non-SEAL, which is most of us are not, right, can work every day, do something every day to develop that warrior mindset. What's a piece that's me, anybody that's listening can take and say, okay, I want to start developing that warrior mindset. And I'm not going to go through SEAL training, but how do I start to do that?
Well, I think, we talked about it previously a little bit, but it's worth revisiting in that do hard things.
Yeah.
And so everybody's got some variant or their metric for what's hard. I mean, what's hard for me is not necessarily what's hard for you, is not necessarily what's hard for a soccer mom, is not necessarily what's hard for a high school sophomore. So you got to rate your level of hard, but everybody can find that, right? We all have these rhythms that is our life, and it's pretty easy to take a sidestep out of even one part of that rhythm and just give a little bit extra there, right? Like if you're trying to learn the piano and you practice Monday, Tuesday, Friday for 15 minutes, add a day, add a minute to each one of those, or 5 minutes to each one of those sessions, and give a little bit more.
Sure.
Sounds like a small thing. That stuff starts adding up in spades when you look at over the long run, which most things are marathons as opposed to sprints, So I'd one, find hard things to do. I'd go constantly pursue something that's new. I mean, the one thing that we know is the case is when you just get in a rut and do the same things, there's not a lot of growth there. So when you do things like learn a new language, learn an instrument, work on some new workout routine or whatever it might be, that's what stretches us into a better place and kind of enriching the lives we live. I mean, I think there's those great lines about, show me a man's, hobbies and things like that, and you'll kind of be able to take their measure. And I think that's true. I mean, I think our work is hugely important. And if you can combine the two, that's great. But you see what people do in their leisure time and how they spend it. And it really is a window into the type of person
there's no doubt
they are and what they value, So
there's no doubt.
I just think you gotta get uncomfortable and you gotta push yourself. And then when you do all that stuff, whatever you pick, no matter how hard, no matter how not hard you choose, whatever that is, when you make the choice, don't quit. Like, go do it. It's so easy to stop, whether it be a diet, a workout program, learning something new. Almost everyone, and I mean, talk about just a simple lesson, but almost everyone gives up, right?
That's right.
I mean, if you just think of the things you start at some point that you wish you'd stuck with, you'd be there. Yeah. I mean, if you stuck with it, you'd know it. You'd learned it. You would have mastered it. I mean, it just
That's absolutely true. You know, everything that you shared resonates with me. And one of the things I tell people I work with all the time, whether it's families or students or when I go out and speak, is that you should intentionally put yourself in situations where the likelihood of failure at the first attempt is higher than the likelihood of success.
Yeah, I love that.
Because you're really going to get a sense of, you mentioned before, everybody has sort of this rhythm of their life. And I completely agree with that. But as I've gotten older and stepped outside my, and really worked on my own insecurities and, you know, I don't know if John, you know, for those of you that are listening, Rourke and I, a huge reason that we've connected is we have a very a close friend in common, John Cena of the WWE. But when you talk about this stuff, for me, one of the biggest sort of aha moments was a few years ago when I was down in his gym, and I've talked about this on a previous episode, but everybody goes in and you know how John gets after it when he trains and works and lives.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he has that warrior mindset, even though he's never been in the military. He's as warrior as it comes, you know?
Oh, for sure.
And I'm in his weight room, and I'm sitting there in flip-flops and shorts, and I'm not lifting. And he puts his arm around me, and he's like, hey, you're not training today. And I was just at a place in my life where things were not good. None of it was good, you know? And I'm like, nah, man, I'm going to hang with you guys and chill out, but I'm not going to lift. And that was the day about 2.5-3 years ago where I really noticed a huge change in my life. Cause I walked out of there and I reached out to him and another buddy. And I said, you know what? No more. I'm not authentic. I'm full of insecurities. I'm talking the talk, but I am far from walking the walk. And then I intentionally, very, very regularly put myself in positions where the likelihood of failure is much greater than the likelihood of success at my first attempt. And man, did I learn, wow, the bar that I've set for myself is too freaking low. It's too low.
No, I love that.
And
I love that.
Probably one of the greatest gifts I've ever had in my life. So everything you're sharing makes such good sense, man.
Yeah, no, I love that. And you know, we've also gone to this place where, you know, failure has become this bad word. And you're just like, look, that's where all the good stuff lives, right? That's where all the fire and the motivation and the lessons come. You know, I mean, I think undefeated sports seasons are just total BS, right? They're a waste. I mean, they, you know, they make for good history, but like that team doesn't learn anything. You know, and it's like the years, like I played 4 years at Syracuse and lacrosse. We won the national championship twice when I was there.
I know, you had a lot.
The 2 years that we won the championship, we had three lost seasons. You know, we had those thumps and those hits early where I was like, okay, we better shore up that. We better work on this. Let's be more prepared for the fight. I remember my junior year, we won the national championship against Maryland, and the final four was us against I'm embarrassed. I can't remember. It was either, you know, Princeton or Virginia, one of the big teams at that point. But Johns Hopkins had gone into that Final Four undefeated, and Maryland knocked them off one game short of the championship game. You're like, there you go, man. They hadn't taken any licks until it counted, and then they went home early.
And
we'd taken those thumps, and then we were ready to take it on.
Yeah, what an awful time to learn that lesson, right?
It's better. Oh, it's the worst.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
As we, you know, as we're approaching sort of the end of our discussion here, I want to really just turn it over to you. And I want to, for all the listeners that are out there, if you go to rourkedenver.com and you check out Ever Onward, I really, really encourage all of you, whether you are a corporate level leader, somebody looking to improve your own life as an individual, as a company, as a corporation, Rourke has, and this is different and more unique than anything I've ever seen from a leadership perspective, and Rourke calls them campfire sessions. I've just started to look into them a little bit. I can tell you for sure, if you've got space in any of them, I'm going to sign on as soon as I can, because I want to keep digesting this stuff as often as I can.
Oh yeah, we'll have you. We'll have you.
But I definitely want you to talk to our listeners about the campfire sessions, the premise behind them, what you are doing with them, and because it's a really, really cool concept, and I think people will just love them, man. So the floor is yours to talk about those.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. You know, the campfire sessions are a little bit of a response to I do a lot of corporate speaking events. I do a lot of, you know, big business, big stage events where, you know, company X or a group of companies for a big convention or something have me come in to speak. And I've got a bunch of followers. You know, I don't have a massive following, but the people that follow me, there's a lot of them that aren't connected to those companies, don't have access to come, you know, really get some interface and some questions in and some time in with me. So I want to create a vehicle through which I could do that, that I could get out to a larger audience and kind of spend time. I love podcasts as we do this. I mean, I digest so much of my information and my entertainment now from podcasts, but I kind of wanted to create a vessel through which I could talk stories, share leadership axioms and concepts, and do it in a way that was special, not to me, but I thought people would experience special when they participate. And the campfire just seemed like the no-brainer. I mean, you mentioned our buddy John. You know, I've sat in a lot of campfires with Big John Cena and had some of the best conversations I can remember. I've also sat at campfires with some of the best friends I've ever had. We haven't said a word to each other. It still felt like purposeful time.
Absolutely.
There's something so elemental and primal about a campfire. If you haven't sat at a campfire, you are doing your life a disservice. If you sit at a fire and stare into those flames and feel its warmth, it is like it shuts down all these operating systems you got running in the background of your mind that you don't need, and it turns on these operating systems that like go back to the caveman that are just really, really neat, and they're kind of energizing. So the campfire sessions in its initial construct is you can go to RourkeDenver.com, sign up for my campfire sessions. You can buy an individual session. I've got three more. I've already done one. I've got three more going this year. The next one's May 6th. You can also buy all four for a package deal. If you buy them and you attend them live, that's the best way to do it, is to be online. We also have some kind of VIP seats that people can purchase to actually physically come to the campfire, and those are starting to fill up, which is fun. So I'll have people sitting around a campfire. I'll tell a story, but then on a web platform, so just sitting from your home on your phone, on your laptop, or wherever you want to pipe that thing in, you're in the conversation. You can send questions in advance. I do live questions and kind of conversation with the audience, both at the campfire and those from the outstations. And it just gives people a chance to do what you and I are doing. You can ask me any question you want to talk about. You want to talk about current events. You want to talk about nuclear threats across the pond. You want to talk about politics, you know, religion, whatever. I'll talk about it all. I don't duck questions, and we have a lot of fun with it. And I'm really enjoying it. Those things are going to morph beyond just those sessions, which are kind of open to anybody that wants to kind of buy into the process. I'm going to do some where I, you know, do it more podcasty with some big name people and
sure,
interesting folks that we can unpack concepts, but it's going to gravitate beyond that into experiences where I'm going to, you know, let a company book it, but I also want to give individuals a chance to come to a full experience, like a multi-day event where we're gonna do some, you know, physical stuff, we're gonna do some suffering, we're gonna have a lot of fun, and we're gonna sit at a couple campfires and work some things out. So a lot of growth there. If you get to RourkeDenver.com and check out Denver Onward brand, the stuff we're doing there, we've got some special stuff coming.
What a phenomenal idea. For those of you that haven't checked out Rourke's website or aren't familiar with his work, I strongly suggest you get on there. I've already signed up, Rourke, weeks ago for Commander's Coffee, so I get the updates, which is really cool.
And
because
and the next one's coming through. Those Commander Coffees, I've had a couple people already say, you know, I haven't gotten a coffee, I only saw the one. That's purposeful too.
Sure.
I feel like we're inundating each other with so much information. You get those Friday motivational emails, then you just go auto delete because it's so consistent that I want to make it like sparing. You don't want
sure
you to want them. So that's kind of the purpose on that. But another one's coming soon.
And it gives you a chance. It gives the reader like me a chance to digest what's shared and then work to try to implement it into your own life. But it's great for those of you that go to Rourke's website, the Commander's Coffee, there's absolutely no charge for them. And there's just, it's highlighted with really strong leadership principles. And we've used the word leadership a lot, but remember, folks, these are things that you can implement into your own lives, whether you are a corporate level leader, whether you're a dad or a husband trying to be more present with your family, whether you're a mom who's volunteering to coach your son and daughter's baseball team. These premises, these mindsets are universal. They're not specific to running a company. They're specific to a way of living that is going to allow you to have more growth, more enjoyment, more satisfaction out of your life than you know right now. And whether you feel like, hey, I have a great life, Great. I'm happy for you, as do I, but I don't want to settle in that. I don't want to rest in that. I want to continue to grow. So for those of you that have had a chance to drive in your car with Rourke Denver for the last hour, for those of you that have listened on one of my podcast platforms to Rourke for the last hour, there are other places where you can get access to his continued knowledge, his continued growth, and the information that he wants to share with you folks as you continue on your journey. My friend, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time to share with me and our audience your experiences as a SEAL, a leader, and just a great human being. I'm honored and grateful that you took the time, and I look forward to some conversations down the road. Thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me, and let's get around a campfire soon.
Without a doubt. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks again for tuning in to Win Today with Johnny Martin. We just wrapped up episode 2 with Rourke Denver. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be good to those you love. Let them know you love them, and have a great day. Thank you to Seven Roads Media and Cloud9 Marketing Group for co-producing the show. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on whatever platform you're on. Without you, I cannot continue to do what I love. You can follow me personally on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Real John C. Martin. I'd love to hear from you, so please reach out with comments and questions after each episode. Your comments push me to get better every day. As always, thank you for your continued support, and don't forget, win today.